It's the Christmas jingle. It airs but once a year, Dominic. Are you happy to hear it?
I think it's a tragedy that we only get to hear it once a year.
Yeah.
It's a work of art.
It is. Thank you, Jim, for our lovely Christmas jingle. And welcome back to The Europeans, the weekly podcast about the world's second smallest continent. I got that from a list of children's facts about Europe. Is it a good fact?
That is quite a good fact about it. Yeah, why are you reading children's facts about Europe? Haven't we graduated from that already?
Yeah, we probably should have done. I just found it on the internet, thought it was a good fact.
But also, is it the second smallest in terms of land mass? Not population, surely.
It didn't really go into detail. Once again, children's website, Dominic. Another fact from this website, did you know that Europe is the producer of 3/4 of the world's potatoes?
I did not know that, but it makes sense. And it's something I can feel proud about.
Stick around. You will learn a few things. How are you doing over there in Amsterdam, Dominic?
Good. I'm a little bit sick, as are you, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going to edit out all of the sniffs and coughs, so no one will know. There it is.
But nice to be joined by you and Katz and Wojciech and a lot of lovely Patreon supporters who are tuning in, watching us record live. Hello, everybody.
Yes, so exciting and a little bit terrifying. Oh, they're waving.
If you're listening to this, not live, you can't hear them because they're on mute. They all look fabulous, I promise. And it would frankly be chaos if everyone was unmuted. But you will be hearing from a few of them later on in the show.
Yes, because this is our last episode before Christmas. So we wanted to celebrate by having some people join in on the fun. We've got some Christmas snacks. I have got some papillotes here. It's these little French chocolates with, sometimes they've got like a riddle in them and sometimes it's a little joke. Do you want to see what I've got today?
Oh yeah, go on.
This one says, cultive tes pensées, des rêves pourraient en fleurir. Cultivate your thoughts. Dreams can flourish there. It's quite nice.
That's a good sentiment I can take with me while recording this podcast. I've got a chocolate Yule log, which is not so appetizing looking, actually. But I looked it up and it comes from the tradition of Yule logs, which is a Nordic tradition where people would put a big, huge whole tree in the fire and have the rest of the tree sticking out in the room. And it's obviously not a log. This is a chocolate version of that. But I'm looking forward to munching on it while you're talking.
So let's get started. What have we got coming up in this final episode of 2022, Dominic?
Well, we've actually got a pretty festive episode for you this week. We've got a festive Good Week, Bad Week coming up. And then we'll be joined by Katrin Schwarz, a historian in Berlin. Last year, she made a very charming Christmas-themed podcast about the European Union. You might have thought it was impossible to put a Christmassy spin on policymaking, but Katrin has somehow managed it, and she will be joining us live from Berlin, if the city's Wi-Fi network holds up, to tell us about everything from Christmas butter regulation to the rather sinister-sounding Christmas lobby.
I am really excited about this interview. It is the perfect blend of festivity and nerdiness that we have come to love on The Europeans. That is coming up in a little bit. But first up, it is Good Week, Bad Week. Wojciech, roll the jingle.
Good week, bad week.
There have been quite a few options we could have chosen from for Good Week, Bad Week this week, from this crazy conspiracy to overthrow the government in Germany to a huge bribery scandal over Qatar that is embroiling the European Parliament today. But we've opted for a couple of lighter stories for this final episode of the year. There'll be plenty of time for seriousness and a bit of misery in January. So for now, who's had a good week, Katie?
Well, I would like to kick off this week's Good Week by playing you a bit of a song. Can we play the song, please, Wojciech?
Goeiemorgen, goeiemorgen.
Blij dat ik je weer vanmorgen zag.
Goeiemorgen, goeiemorgen, goeiemorgen.
That is the classic 1971 hit Goeiemorgen, Morgen by Nicole en Hugo. It was Belgium's entry in the Eurovision Song Contest that year, and it's still a super well-known song in Flanders. And Nicole en Hugo themselves, who were a married couple, they were still performing this song live just a few years ago. You are a Dutch / Flemish speaker, kind of, Dominic.
Kind of.
What does goeiemorgen mean?
It means good morning, or good morning morning, as the song says. And actually, I looked up the lyrics, and it's a pretty ridiculously chirpy song overall about how happy Nicole and Hugo are, that it's the morning, they're happy to be here again. The world is a stage for everyone to share. It's all that kind of happy shit that will either make your day or make you want to vomit.
I kind of want to play this song to like all the people in my life who are not morning people. Just play it really loudly in their ears and see how they take it. Anyway, why am I talking about this song now? Well, it has gone unexpectedly viral 50 years later in Ukraine. It is the backing music to a wide array of TikToks that people are posting from Ukraine. Why is that? Well, to find out, producer Katz reached out to a couple of people who she met while she was reporting in Ukraine recently to ask what goeiemorgen sounds like to a Ukrainian-speaking ear. Let's hear from Valeria and Maxim.
This song actually went viral in Ukraine because the part where they sing goeiemorgen, it's literally
penis morning, if you're gonna translate, this is like easy translation, if you're gonna translate it straight, I'm sorry for that, but yeah, it sounds like that.
And the part huyeta sounds like Ukrainian curse word that means bullshit, bollocks, like crap. So the whole picture sounds like have a good fucking morning, you crap. And Ukrainians joking that, oh yeah, every morning in Ukraine is like goeiemorgen, goeiemorgen, have a the hell of a morning, you crap.
Knowing what that sounds like now to a Ukrainian ear, like I just love how this jaunty tune goes with the lyric. It's like penis morning, morning, have a fucking crappy morning. That's just great. I love it.
It actually makes me like the song more.
It's so good. If you look at the kind of TikToks that people are posting with this song as a backing track from Ukraine, a lot of them are making light of how much everything sucks in Ukraine right now, particularly how cold it is at a time of electricity shortages. The Brussels Times, who's reporting on this, first alerted us to the fact that this Flemish song had indeed gone viral in Ukraine. They described it as an ironically raised middle finger to Russia and the invasion. And they quoted one Ukrainian as saying, when the lights go out, for example, or when we cannot take a shower because there's no water, then we shout goeiemorgen, and we joke about it and we try to stay positive.
It's very touching and also quite heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is quite heartbreaking.
But bringing it back to my favourite topic of Eurovision.
Of course.
Awkward segue. Did goeiemorgen actually win Eurovision in the 1970s?
No, it didn't. No, it finished 10th out of 18th. So not amazing. Eurovision was actually won that year by Monaco. And just to take you down a bit of a Eurovision rabbit hole, because why not? Actually, the Wikipedia page for the contest that year is quite catty about Monaco's victory in Eurovision. It says, the winner was Monaco with the song Un banc, un arbre, une rue. This was Monaco's first and only victory in the contest. The song was performed by a French singer living in France, sung in French, conducted by a French native, and written by a French team. So very keen to point out how French the song actually was.
Sounds like that Wikipedia entry was also written by a French person.
Maybe. But anyway, back to goeiemorgen, morgen. I love stories about things that sound totally fine in one language, but they're ridiculous in another. So like a Syrian friend of mine was telling me a while back about how MacBook Air sounds like MacBook Dick to Arabic speakers, which makes me laugh every time I see a MacBook. And it's just really nice to see a random 1970s Flemish song going viral in a country where people really need things to laugh about right now. Nicole, of the duo behind the song, Nicole and Hugo, she actually passed away last month at the age of 76. She and Hugo had been married since 1971, the year that the song came out. But I like to think that she would have had a good giggle over the song, getting a new lease of life in this quite funny and bittersweet way, like a full half century after it became a hit.
Nice story.
It is nice.
We're going to have to put an explicit language warning on this episode.
I've just realized that. Who has had a bad week, Dominic?
This accidentally seems to be turning into a bit of a Belgian-themed festive episode. Who knew Belgium's the most festive place around? Because this week I'm giving bad week to Sinterklaas in Belgium. And I guess I should start by explaining who Sinterklaas is right before I tell you why he's had a bad week. Or maybe you can help me out, Katie. You know Sinterklaas. You've hung out in the Netherlands enough. What do you know about him?
Looks a bit like Santa, but isn't Santa. He's kind of St. Nicholas, right? And he's got this big sort of white beard and like a red hat and a racially problematic friend.
That was very good. And it's maybe good for people who don't know much about Belgium and the Netherlands to know that Sinterklaas is a big deal in Belgium and the Netherlands. Here in the Netherlands, the festivities around Sinterklaas at the start of December are way bigger than the festivities around Christmas. And it's really quite a separate festivity to Christmas. He is actually one of the sources of inspiration for Santa Claus, but he is also quite a different figure, as you said, despite the fact that they both have a penchant for red clothing and big white beards. He looks a bit more bishop-y because he's more of a religious figure, based on the patron saint of children, St. Nicholas. And according to the story that is told widely in Belgium and the Netherlands, he travels up by boat to the Low Countries from Spain each year, arriving in mid-November with his assistants, who are dressed in colourful kind of Renaissance attire with ruffs and feathered hats. His assistant is called Pete and is sometimes still referred to as Black Pete, and very controversially, sometimes still in blackface. Mm. Although thankfully that is happening a bit less, at least here in a city like Amsterdam. That's not to say that the tradition is fixed or that there's been like sufficient reckoning with the racist elements of this tradition, but progress is slowly being made in some places. Anyway, in the Netherlands, in the weeks running up to December the 5th, kids leave letters in their shoes overnight, addressed to Sinterklaas. And if they're lucky, they'll wake up with a gift from the Sint in their shoe the next morning. In Belgium, however, they celebrate Sinterklaas one day later, on December the 6th. And lots of kids don't put letters in their shoes. They actually send letters in the post to Sinterklaas. And there's actually an official address from the Belgian post service that you can send letters to Sint. And that's translated as 1 Spain Street with the postal code of 0612, which is the 6th of December, his day. And the city is listed as Heaven.
Oh, so he's going like the literal real postal service.
Yeah, you have to pay for a stamp and everything.
Oh, and what happens to the letters afterwards?
Well, this is where we come to the bad week bit. This is why Sinterklaas is having a bad week in Belgium. All the letters, they do all end up in the same place. The Belgian Postal Service collects them. But if you had been walking past the headquarters of the Belgian Postal Service in Brussels last week on Tuesday, you would have actually had a pretty hard time walking down that bit of road, because for quite a few hours, the pavement was blocked by over a dozen big rubbish containers. The containers said on the side of them, confidential paper, and most of them were locked, but not all of them were locked. And a passerby eventually took a peek inside one of these containers to find that it was full of letters to Sinterklaas from children.
Oh no.
So dozens of rubbish containers sitting on a pavement packed with these letters representing childhood's hopes and dreams. It's a pretty bad look.
That is not a good look. Have the Postal Service responded to this scandal?
Yeah, well, actually, you say scandal, maybe ironically, but there is a bit of a serious side to this story, namely that some privacy laws may have been broken in allowing the rubbish container to be left on the street unlocked and unattended. And most of the letters contain the names and addresses of the kids who sent them. Mm. So it's really not very good. The Belgian Postal Service think that they were all locked when they were put out on the street, but that perhaps someone broke into one of them because they were left on the street for so long.
Why were all of these things on the street for so long?
It's apparently something to do with a subcontractor putting them out by mistake on the wrong day when there was no collection, and they ended up staying on the street overnight. And these things happen, I guess, but the photos that were posted on social media of all these kids' letters are pretty unfortunate. I should say that the Belgian Postal Service are taking it all pretty seriously because of the privacy breach, and they are investigating it further.
But sorry, you say it's because the collection was not at the right time, whatever. But does that mean that the thing that we've discovered is actually that these letters are put out in the trash every single year? Is that what this is?
Yes and no. According to the Postal Service, the letters don't all get read. That's true. And they don't get like hung up on the wall. But that's because there are hundreds of thousands of them. So I guess it's kind of understandable. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they try to write down all the names and addresses of kids who included their postal details on the letter. And they do then send a letter back to those kids from Sinterklaas, even if the letters haven't actually been read, which I guess is quite nice.
That's so nice. An actual letter back from Sinterklaas. And just for the children listening, it is actually from Sinterklaas, right?
Of course it is, yes. Anyway, it's probably a bit unfair of me to give bad week to Sinterklaas because it was actually probably bad week for the Belgian Postal Service. But that had less of a festive ring to it.
Let's give it to Sinterklaas. We have had a pretty good year here at the Europeans, if I say so myself. We have made some episodes that I'm really proud of. We have talked to people all across the continent. And I sometimes had to pinch myself and say, are we really doing this? And we really are doing this 5 whole years after we started because of the amazingly generous listeners who chip in each month so that we can pay for the show to get made every week.
Yes, and some of those amazingly generous people are here with us today. Thank you all so much. Please give yourselves a round of applause on mute, ideally.
And raise a glass to yourselves. Hooray! I'm raising my licorice tea because I'm sick.
Big thanks also to everyone who wasn't able to join us tonight. We love you too.
We have some new supporters to thank this week. They are Wolf Berger, Eddie Bozzano-Andrews, Leslie Farnsworth, Rebecca Kahn, Stuart Hedges, Rebecca Custer, Juliet Hazel. Oh, and there's one William Kramer here. Is that someone from your clan, Dominic?
That's my cousin. Thank you, William. Oh. Those of you who are with us tonight can see how budget and operation this is. I mean, actually, you can't see because of my background, but I am sitting on the floor genuinely.
Also, what are you saying about my bedroom?
Your bedroom is fine, but it is still a bedroom. And this podcast is still recorded from our homes. There's no studio, there's no big money. We are still a tiny operation, even if there are now 4 of us. But we love making this show and we would love to keep making it into 2023. So if you would like to help us do that, we would be really grateful if you could chip in a little cash at patreon.com/Europeans podcast.
Also, if you have a friend or a loved one who is a fan of the show, you could sign up on their behalf as a Christmas present. We're already doing that for a couple of listeners. And if you sign them up for $5 a month, we will send this friend of yours a voice message that sounds like the podcast is talking to them. What better gift could there be for Christmas this year than Dominic talking to you?
It's a strange gift.
It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And what could be more festive, Dominic, than talking about regulation and lobbying?
If anyone can find a way to make those two things festive, it is this podcast.
Yeah, and we're going to do it with a little bit of help from somebody who has looked at length into the Christmassy aspects of the European Union. I love this. Katrin Schwarz is a freelance historian. She specializes in cultural history and Jewish history. And last year, she made a European podcast advent calendar in German that is 24 different podcast episodes, all relating to the European Union and all relating to Christmas in some way. It's amazing. She joins us now from Berlin. Hi, Katrin.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Dominic. Happy to be here.
Oh, really nice to have you here.
Katie was telling me that there's quite a lovely backstory about why you made this series of 24 European Christmas podcasts. Why did you decide to make them?
So it actually was a present last year because we all were a bit down because of COVID regulations, lockdowns and so on. And I decided to make it as a gift for my boyfriend.
I love that. Dominic has never made me a podcast for my birthday.
I'm not your boyfriend.
That's what you think.
When are you going to learn? Your husband is here on this call.
This isn't at all awkward. Anyway, what did he think of the podcast, Katrin? Did he like them?
Yes, he did. He really did. So when we met, we bonded over Europe, which was kind of nerdy, but I liked it. And we both love podcasts, audiobooks, radio dramas, and he had already all the equipment at home because he was doing some podcasting, and I nicked it and grabbed all my research I already had done because I love nerdy European stories, and I gave it a go. And then he absolutely loved it and told all his friends about it.
So
he
nice.
Shared the episodes, and a lot of people were listening. I was really surprised about that.
That's so cool. So there are 24 episodes because it is an advent calendar. So there's 24 doors, as you call them, doors in this audio advent calendar of yours. And we haven't got time to talk about every single episode today. So we're just going to talk about three of them, starting with the episode that you made about butter, which is, of course, a key ingredient around this time of year for many festive European recipes. But I believe you found, Catherine, during the course of your research, that the EU actually has specific regulation for Christmas butter.
So it started with a headline, I found it from 2017, about dairy producers warning that Europe will face a dairy shortage about Christmas time and called it a Christmas butter crisis. But it shouldn't be confused with the Christmas butter, which is a British dessert, which you also know as hard sauce, brandy butter, sherry butter, and so on. And you typically serve it with plum pudding, fruit cakes, or gingerbread.
Mm.
So that is Christmas butter we're talking about.
I love brandy
butter. And basically, it's a lot about butter, sugar, and alcohol. So you don't need a lot of cooking skills for that.
And so how is this product regulated by the EU?
So since 2007, there's a European community regulation. So to be called rum, brandy, or sherry butter, you have to have at least 20% butter fat for that. And in this regulation, you also have the Swedish Messmör, the German Butterkäse, and the Spanish Mantequilla de Soria, all different kind of dairy products which are regulated. So if you actually buy them, you know what's in it, at least 20% butter fat.
There you are. I actually read an article from the early 2000s from a local British newspaper. It was from this brandy butter manufacturer who was angry that he wasn't going to be allowed to call his product brandy butter anymore. And there was this like fantastic angry quote from him saying something like, "We've already fought on the beaches and this will happen again if they carry on with this nonsense." And I feel like we should have known Brexit was coming. It started with the brandy butter.
Yeah.
Really,
Catherine, we also wanted to talk to you about the Christmas lobby. We're always quite interested in lobbying about who is walking the corridors of power in Brussels, trying to convince politicians to make policies that favour their interests. But who is lobbying around Christmas?
So there are two I especially mentioned in my episode about them because I really found them quite nice. Nice kind of lobbying. And for one, it's the Christmas Tree Grower Council of Europe. So they are meeting in summer meetings in places like Stavanger, Norway, and discuss how to promote sales of natural Christmas trees instead of plastic ones, define quality levels and support fair trades and guidelines for use of pesticides so we all have fair trade Christmas trees at home. So that's the one. And the other one I found really, really nice, and it's also got to do with COVID. I'm sorry I have to mention the C word, but it's about a lot of lobbyists doing very, very successful lobbying for Father Christmas during 2020 lockdown. And it's about that Father Christmas doesn't need to oblige all pandemic precautions as a key worker. We have letters from children saying that he shouldn't do quarantine. And we have answers and responses from politicians. So the Belgian health minister wrote to Santa Claus telling him he would not have to quarantine when he enters Belgium. And we have a five-year-old Tommaso from Italy saying that we should all add hand sanitizers to the traditional biscotti and glass of milk.
Aww.
That's actually very sensible because he does go to a lot of households.
It's true.
I found that quite touching and it had to go to the advent calendar, of course.
I like that there's finally a non-sinister type of lobbying that we can all get behind.
Mm.
Not that all lobbyists are bad.
Not all, but yeah.
Finally, this one's got a slightly less strong Christmas link, perhaps, but it's still a nice story. And it is the episode of the podcast that you made about Jean Monnet, who is one of the founding fathers of the European project. What was that episode about?
So Jean Monnet was a businessman. He was not like a voted politician. And his family traded in cognac, which is a brandy, for several generations. And he really got involved in politics very soon. And came to know an American known as Dean Akeson, who was later the advisor of JF Kennedy. They really worked close together and got friends eventually. And Jean Monnet wrote to him somewhere in 1961 and said, "I have this new idea, apart from European unification, I have this brand new idea about Atlantic community, and we're doing all trade together. And are you responsive for some bold new ideas, Dean?" And Dean Akson replied, I'm very responsive to your sardine sandwiches and your Christmas cognac, but please spare me of bold new ideas. Kennedy and the likes have enough of them. He later got his way, John Monnet did, but yeah, I found that really, really nice to get a glimpse of this private friendship of those.
Wow. Well, everyone that speaks German should find Catherine's podcast. It's called Have Yourself a Very European Christmas. There's going to be a link in the show notes. And I hear that you're thinking of making an English version too, right?
Yes, I was planning to do that this year, but unexpectedly, I had a lot of projects going on about other historical important topics, but I'm planning to do that next year and maybe put it down in writing. Let's see. But yeah, I hope to do an English version of it and an updated one, of course.
Great. Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, you'll find a lot of listeners here, I think. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us. Along with Catherine's podcast, you can also find a link in the show notes to her latest work, which is about witches in Brandenburg, a fascinating piece of history. And just going back to that last story about Jean Monnet and the sardine sandwiches, there is also a recipe there for sardine sandwiches with Christmas cognac.
All this talk of Europe and Christmas got us thinking about what the end of year festivities look like around this very diverse continent of ours. And since we are lucky enough to have all these people sitting in on this recording today from all over the place, we wanted to ask a couple of you how you are celebrating.
Eddie, I think you're in Ireland. Eddie Bassano Andrews.
Hi, yeah, I'm in Ireland. I'm originally from the UK. So it's not so different here in Ireland, really. So most people eat turkey and it's the usual kind of families get together. Although in this house, we eat goose because we don't like turkey. Everyone buys a big box of, you get these big box of Tato crisps.
Ireland's best crisps.
Ireland's best crisps, yeah.
And they're so good.
They are, but they come at this time of year, they come in great big boxes of about 24 packets, and the box is all festively decorated with Mr. Tato covered in snow, and you have to have one of these boxes. So we're on our second box at the moment, and it hasn't even got to Christmas.
Oh, I wish I had them now instead of my stupid chocolate log. One more Christmas tradition. Natalie Lamprou, tell us about Christmas in Cyprus. Oh, and you've got a beautiful cat.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to get him off my laptop.
No. Pets are encouraged.
Pets are very much encouraged.
Yeah. So in Cyprus, Christmas isn't a huge deal for us. Easter is more of a bigger celebration, but on the 6th of January, we celebrate something called Epiphany. And tradition is we eat these sweets. They're called lukumades, and they're delicious. They're these deep fried balls of semolina, kind of like donut balls, drenched in like a spice sugar syrup. And legend has it that on Epiphany, you get these goblins running around your house and they try to like wreak havoc. And then the only way to get rid of them is to throw lukumades at them. I don't know what the logic is behind that. And I remember my grandmother specifically telling me that you're supposed to throw the lukumades up to the ceiling so that they stick on the ceiling. I never succeeded in that. And I don't know if it was just like our household or if it's a Cyprus-wide thing. I think I need to research that a little more.
Doesn't the ceiling get like covered in sugar and stuff?
Yep, it's very sticky.
Natalie, you really have become our like official Cypriot food expert on this podcast. You might remember that she was our guest about a year ago or maybe longer when we were talking about halloumi and halloumi politics. It's one of my favorite episodes of all time. So thanks for bringing us more great Cypriot food stories.
I think we need to get Natalie back in January for an Epiphany episode.
I agree.
It's the halloumi follow-up that everyone needs.
You've all heard more than enough recommendations of European culture from Katie and me over the years. So this week, we're going to hand over the microphone to a couple of Patreon supporters to tell us about their favorite European cultural recommendations for the holidays. So who's got a podcast, a film, a book, or even an app they'd like to recommend?
Ooh, an app.
Where are we starting?
I think we're going to hear from Britta, who I think is in Lisbon.
Yes, I have a really small Instagram account that I've been following for a while as an art history dork, and it's called Balthazar the Black Magus. Balthazar was one of the three kings. he's often portrayed throughout history as being of African descent. And it's really fascinating to see in the Middle Ages or the Renaissance, the 1800s, how these different portrayals look. They're often really beautiful. And it's a really good antidote to Zwarte Piet, I feel like, as well.
Cool. We're going to check that out.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Very Christmassy.
Very Christmassy.
Thank you again. This was so fun.
So nice you're here. Thank you. And thank you for all the recommendations you send us, Britta. It really helps.
Bird alert.
Could we also hear from Owen? You're in the Isle of Man?
There you go. We've got it.
Yes,
I am in the Isle of Man. My isolation inspiration is some gay poetry, because apparently that's all I read. And it's a book that I bought when I went to Gays the Word in London, a gayest bookshop ever. And the collection is called Limbic by Peter Scalpello. And I just thought it was such a beautiful and like raw demonstration of like queer British identity, and like it doesn't shy away from darkness and lightness, and there's a lot of variety. It's very like, yeah, raw, sexual, intense, but beautiful. And I just think that more people should read gay poetry, and if they're gonna, that's a great place to start.
Today's happy ending is a story I saw posted on our Patreon Facebook group, actually just posted about an hour ago by Monica. Thank you, Monica, for sharing this story. It's the news that a supermarket chain in the Netherlands, Jumbo, has decided to open up special checkout lanes for people who would like to spend a bit more time packing up, paying, and principally chatting to their cashier. The lanes are called kletskassers, or chat checkouts, and they're designed to make the experience of going to the supermarket more sociable, especially for older people who are more likely to suffer from loneliness. And I think it's such a nice initiative that really cuts against the rather sad trend in our metropolitan lives of cutting out human contact and streamlining things so they are as quick as possible. Loneliness is obviously a really big problem for a lot of people, and particularly for people later in life. So Jumbo trialed this scheme in a store in Noord-Brabant, and after its success, have decided to roll it out to 200 more stores, along with some chat corners where people can have a cup of tea or coffee and a chat. So well done, Jumbo. I thought there was a nice, cheering, happy ending to end the year.
That's super nice. Well done, Jumbo. That is it for this week and for the Europeans in 2022. Dominic and I have a lot of people to thank for helping us to make so many great episodes this year. Our incredibly talented producers, Katz Laszlo in Amsterdam and Wojciech Aleksiak in Warsaw, and our friends both at Allianz Foundation and Are We Europe.
Thank you also to everyone who took the time to speak to us this year for the show, especially the participants who took part in our series made with Are We Europe called This Is What a Generation Sounds Like. Speaking of which, the latest beautiful visual podcast in that series is out now. We'll put the link to the visual episode of Hannah in the show notes.
Thank you, Catherine, for being the only guest in the history of this podcast to have been interviewed in front of people watching from all over the continent and maybe even the world. Not at all scary. Well done for that. And of course, a massive, massive thank you to the supporters of this podcast. We are so, so grateful to you for making this show possible.
Thank you, everyone, also for listening. We'll see you in 2023.
Cheers.
Auf Wiedersehen.